Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy.
Listeners are in for a treat from this one. Well, let's just start this way. Let's cut that part out. Cut all that part out. And
no, don't cut it out, dude. Let's just keep with it because I think we've got a special secret sneaky surprise. Like, people are probably thinking, oh, it's just Mike and Doug doing their normal Mike and Doug intro bullshit. But guess what? We've got a special exciting treat for y'all motherfuckers.
And so,
oh, you heard her laugh. Maybe you just heard her laugh.
I think you might have heard her laugh. But Stephanie Brinkerhoff is joining us. So Stephanie, welcome back. It's been a minute.
Thank you so much for having me. I know it's been, let's see, it's been almost a year.
Has it really? Holy shit.
I was thinking about that. I think it's been right up to a year because it was like a month before solstice was when we first met and chatted. And holy shit, your life has just been going nuts.
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
In all the best possible ways.
It's been good. And I'm so glad to be back. Thank you for inviting me.
It's our pleasure. So in that episode, it was called, we called it Love Led Me Out. I think, was that the name of it?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
It's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done. So if you listeners haven't.
It's one of my favorite episodes. It might be one of our most famous. It might be one of our most popular episodes too.
I think it gets shared a lot. And, you know, obviously the X factor is you, Stephanie. So welcome back. Yeah, and then the other treat is that Doug and I are going to be going away here soon, and you're going to be taking the reins on this one.
Yes, I'm going to be hosting the episode, and I'm so excited because I can never shut up. So now it's a good opportunity for me to say all the things I want to say.
Oh, that's exciting. So it's funny, Stephanie, Mike and I have talked about this a couple of times where, this platform needs more voices. It needs people who are doing cool and exciting things. And you just so happen to have a guest on, and your conversation is about exactly cool and exciting things. So can you give us a little bit of info of what we're about to listen to?
Yeah. So his name is Otto. Otto is a plant medicine integration coach. He's also a guide, but he does so much more than that. I found him when I was going through the thick of my sort of like dark night of the soul. And when I randomly found him through Google, it was like a total synchronicity thing. I don't even know how I found him. He was the coach, the integration coach that really helped me navigate through everything. He's super, super smart, and we're going to have a conversation about individuation, and it's so great. I'm so excited to be talking about this because I feel like that's a word that many people don't even know what it means. And it's often a process that people find themselves in without even realizing it. So yeah, when I found him, he was essentially like, yeah, you're going through this process. And I was like, what is that? And he kind of, you know, showed me the ropes, and it absolutely changed my life.
You're speaking to my Jungian soul right now. And I love how you said you kind of, usually I think it is a call from your higher self or your soul that initiates you into that journey, into the hero, the journey of individuation, like hero's journey or whatever you want to call it, where the hero goes and into the underworld and sacrifices himself to carry the treasure back to the collective and to discover your true self. And, you know, Doug, as much Jungian shit we talk about on this podcast, we've never talked about individuation. So this, I'm glad we've reserved it for Stephanie to come and Otto. And I love the combination of him being a plant medicine facilitator and being Jungian informed, because I think the two just, you know, go together like potatoes and gravy. I don't know. Like,
yeah, I agree.
That's so funny. I'm glad you mentioned it, Mike, because really you're right. It's not an exaggeration. We talk about all sorts of this shit, and basically archetypes are like our bread and butter. Jungian stuff is our bread and butter. I mean, you're getting a PhD in Jungian analysis, and yet we have never talked about intuition. And so this is very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm super excited to share it with you guys. I think that he does a really good job of breaking it down into like English for people who have never even heard of anything like this. And what I love about the individuation process is that it's almost like the process of coming back to yourself, or like the process of like waking up in a way. And anybody can go through this with like, just starting to do like asking themselves the right questions, you know, self-examination. It's fantastic. I love it. I love this subject. I could talk about it for hours.
Well, I can't wait to be a listener on this episode, that you guys are all about to hear. And also, Stephanie, I just want to also tee it up that this isn't a one-time deal, that you're going to be hosting a series or a continuous series for as long as you want to host of episodes. And so I don't know, what type of guests are you wanting to bring on?
Oh, I have so many lined up already. So many ideas. I want to talk about ethical space holding. I've had I think a lot of people have had really bad experiences with unethical space holding. So I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the process of spiritual emergence, which is another thing that is like super fascinating and interesting to me. I would love to talk about like plant medicine, what happens if you're going through plant medicine, like psychosis, because that's something else that I feel like is very common that there's not a lot of resources out there for. Yeah, that's what I got so far.
Well, I mean, that last one, I feel like I'm coming out of a plant medicine psychosis of the last, I mean, it got scary. And I don't want to throw that term out too loosely, because I'm sure it even gets scarier and even where people lose more of a grip on reality. And so anyway, we don't have to get into all that yet, but I'm here for it, Stephanie. I'm just like gushing on you, and you're radiating from the screen, and I just can't wait to hear these episodes you're going to do.
Thank you.
Oh yeah.
So before Doug and I leave here, just a couple more plugs. So the Patreon is up. We've got some really cool episodes on there. You know, Doug and I are doing a Mythified series where we break down myths, and then also dreams. Speaking of Jungian shit, we're doing a Dreamscape series where we have two episodes of each out now. And the Dreamscapes is meant to kind of walk you through what are dreams, why should they matter, and how can you start working with them? And I'm loving them. So go on over to Patreon, and it's any donation you want, $1 a month, $5 a month, $10 a month, $50, $5,000, whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, join us for sure. If you're hearing that call to adventure, please join us over on the Patreon, and we've got some pretty fun and cool stuff on there. Music, bonus episodes, cool shit.
And one more plug for that. The money for the Patreon is going to help us with the editing and stuff, so we can have more episodes like this with Stephanie and Otto. So if you love these episodes, come support us on Patreon. And I think that's good. Take it away.
All right. Enjoy, everyone.
Hey, take it thank away, you. Steph. Okay, Mr. Otto Mayer, thank you for joining me on this podcast. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little sniffly at the moment, but other than that, excited to be here.
That's okay. I'm sure your wisdom is still profound.
Nice. Yeah. I think it'll still come through just a little nasally. Other than that, I think it'll be clear.
Yeah, well, it is that time of year, you know, allergy season. So it's okay. I will let you off the hook.
Perfect.
As I just mentioned in the little intro, I found you when I was in my darkest, dark night of the soul. I don't even remember how I found you. It was like so random.
I think you, you were suffering. You found me through some of my writing, which is interesting because I just write to write. And you were the first person that ever reached out via my blog, which like to do one-on-one work, which I found like become beautiful, you know?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was like a random Google search. And I remember reading, a blog post. And I was like, this guy knows. He knows what's going on. And I didn't know. I didn't know anything. I was just so, I was so lost. But I was just like, well, I'm going to give this a try. And then it ended up being a lot more beneficial than I expected, especially because, you know, the term plant medicine integration coach can mean so many things. And I feel like, well, basically what you introduced me to was the individuation process, which is what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
And that was like totally life-changing for me. Mm-hmm. It was something that I had never even heard that word before. I didn't understand what it was. And it was a process that I was already in the middle of. And just being able to put language to it and have someone kind of like lay out a rough sort of like map of like, okay, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
This is what you can do for yourself was so beneficial. So before we jump into that, I want to hear a little bit of your backstory. Mm-hmm. So like how you got into this work, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I definitely resonate with this sort of like, I struggle sometimes with the name or the title of the work that I offer because it's like, yeah, psychedelic integration coach doesn't really land. And it's just like, it's almost like a cover. You know, like where like I think the real work is individuation. I mean, maybe I should just say that, but I don't know, because it's like it can be through plant medicine, can be through therapy, it can be like all these different, you know, rituals, whatever. But it's tough to put a label to it because I'm like, don't feel like a therapist, don't feel like a coach, don't feel like it's more like, yeah, guiding people through like the organic process of what is already happening, you know? So
yeah.
How did I get into that work? Well, similar to you, I had found myself in the middle of a process and was sort of drowning and very, this is the first time in my life I felt like I was drowning in the way that I was. I had maybe like, let's say I like lived a whole life, right? Like I was a professional athlete. I had like certain types of friends. I had a relationship. I had a certain identity of like who I thought I was. And then a series of events took place. And all of a sudden I woke up one day and was like broke, no career, lost friends, lost this relationship, lost my sense of identity. All of that shit was gone. And to lose that type of foundation, I think it plunges you into asking questions about who you are and what's going on in a way that you would have never considered, and maybe pushes you in directions that you would have never considered. So for me, I went from being one type of person to just kind of like, I think the natural exploration for me was seeking relief. I was seeking some relief and understanding. And in that, it took me to reading a lot of Carl Jung, reading a lot of Jiddu Krishnamurti, so some like Eastern philosophy. And then I got really into meditation. I was spending a lot of time at a Tibetan monastery, meditating a lot just to kind of like survive, honestly. My mental health was like pretty rough at the time. And then I took a trip to India and lived in an ashram for a few months. But it wasn't, you know, when I got back from the ashram, I felt like I was surviving, but I wasn't really thriving. And then that's what kind of sent me into plant medicine and working with ayahuasca and stuff. But the exploration in the realm of, I would say, like Jungian ideas and individuation, all that stuff was like, I had been like immersed in this for years, like was obsessively reading this stuff because it was really like landing. Like you said, like when I first shared the idea of individuation with you. So to make a long story short, what brought me into this work was sort of being plunged into it unconsciously, you know? So like I didn't really have any choice in the matter. My life had just fallen apart. And then through dreams, through synchronous seeing a book that all of a sudden is like explaining all of these things that I'm going through, all this kind of stuff, I started to like find the process that sort of had found me. And in that, something that appeared to be a tragedy was actually like one of the biggest gifts, which I think like anyone who like properly goes through an individuation process is like, wouldn't choose to do it again, but
yeah,
most valuable moment of my life, you know? Yeah. So I think that that's like, that's a like long and short of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's often the case where you don't start to really examine yourself unless you absolutely have to, you know, it's like you're thrust yeah. into it, like you said, and you don't really have a choice. And you are seeking some type of relief because everything that you've been doing up to that point in your life is no longer working yeah. suddenly.
Yeah. And you almost like, you know, the ego or our sense of identity or our sense of consciousness or what we know, all of the things that we know, you know, the first book that really resonated with me in the East was a book by Jiddu Krishnamurti called Freedom from the Known. And I remember reading it being like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Like, how can knowledge be a prison? You know, and he's saying that like, it coincided with the individuation process for the books. He was basically saying that like, it is all of the constructs of what you know that is causing the suffering in your life. And I would say in the process of individuation is sort of like the unconscious comes to basically like take away all of your foundations, but your foundation, like all these things are making you suffer, or they're like not even true or whatever, you know? So you almost need this like external force to like take it from you because you're pretty gripped to it, you know? So that feels like tragedy, yeah. but long-term you're like, oh, this was like healthy. This is like when I needed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that unconscious sort of external, it feels like external force that often like makes all your constructs crumble is really, I feel like you know, like the true you that's like trying to be like, listen to me, you know, yeah. but we just are so comfortable and so distracted and whatever that we don't actually listen. And so it has to like hit us with a sledgehammer to get us to pay attention, you know?
Oh yeah, of course.
But I was going to say, yeah, one of my favorite quotes is from that book. I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it's something like, you can look at a tree and the words will not help you touch it. Something like that, exactly. Where it's like, yeah, like the knowledge of the tree, the word tree, like that's not going to help you experience the tree, which is kind of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. You have direct experience, and it's not until, I mean, I think this is what psychedelics are really great for. I think sometimes we can have the experience of thinking we're interacting with reality when really we're interacting with like five different filters of perception and ideas, and we're not ever touching the tree, you know?
Yep.
And that's like kind of a tragedy, you know, it's like a bit of a tragedy that happens, but all right, you were going to ask me.
Yeah.
I feel like no. I need direction or I'm going to go.
No, this is great. This is great. You have a lot to say. That's why I wanted to have you on here. Okay. So you are a Nevermo. That is a slang term in the Mormon world for you've never been Mormon. So welcome to the podcast as a Nevermo. And that's something that was so refreshing, I feel like, when we started working together, was someone who had a spiritual perspective that was never tied to any religion. Mm-hmm. Bring that up. You know, obviously there's going to be there's a lot of different people that listen to this podcast, but obviously there's going to be a lot of ex-Mormons.
Yeah.
Explain, if you could, just real briefly and simply explain what the term individuation means and where it comes from.
Yeah.
It's such a like intricate concept, but I'd love to try to like break it down for someone who doesn't even know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah. I think I can break it down simple. Obviously it can become like infinitely complex, but yeah, thank you for directing this, because it's like, yeah, it doesn't need to be super complex. So I think that like to make it simple, I think the process of individuation is, all right, so basically there's a myth that I'll use that's like really simple, and then I'll also use like more explicit. So explicitly, I think that when we grow up or when we're born, we essentially have two needs, two major categories of needs. One is attachment, and then the other is authenticity. So we have a need to be cared for by our families, by our environment, you know, attachment to our parents, siblings, friends, family, community, yada, yada, yada. As children, like we have tremendous needs, you know, as compared to other animals. It's crazy, you know, like kids need to be fostered for a very long time. The other need is authenticity, for us to like be who we are and to listen to our inner, you could say like impulses, our inner guidance, our inner, like, so you can call it like the, like inner drives, you know. Essentially, a lot of what happens when we're socialized is we have to sacrifice authenticity for attachment. So that would mean like, you can't be loud in this environment. You need to be quiet. So in that moment, you say to yourself, all right, so I got to like shut off that part of me because it's threatening my attachment need, right? To be accepted in the community, to be accepted by my parents, whatever it is. I would say that's also kind of a natural process because we're social creatures, you know, is to be socialized. And in an environment with a religion, there's a whole doctrine of what is and isn't acceptable. So basically what happens is you construct this identity or this ego that's congruent with the collective, right? And that's all well and good for a time, you know, and depending on how much authenticity you have to sacrifice in order to be in homeostasis with the community, the culture that you're in. What happens to all the internal drives and forces of nature in you that have to be sacrificed as a means of attachment? Those come back to roost at some point, you know, and they kind of haunt you. So the process of individuation is essentially that at some point in your life, that authenticity will come home to roost. And it'll start with a feather. It'll start with dreams. It'll start with like a sneaking feeling. It'll start with maybe a chronic illness or an anxiety. And that'll be manageable for a while. And if you're really, you know, living in a way that's really out of congruence with your nature, your wholeness, all of who you are, eventually that'll turn into a tragedy. So that'll turn into a divorce or like a death in the family, and you'll totally like shift your life completely, or you're basically plunged into this process where I would say that those authentic drives, they're seeking life, just like any plant would seek the sun, you know, so you can't get rid of them. And it's only a matter of time before they come up. And the process of individuation is essentially those drives coming home to roost, and you as a identity or as a individual learning how to expand your sense of self, your relationships, your ideas about the world, all this stuff to be able to assimilate your wholeness, you know, as opposed to like that sacrificial movement as a child that you had to make to maintain, yeah, your attachment bonds.
Yeah. So with this process of individuation, or with this idea of individuation, there's kind of this notion that every person comes to the world with like an authentic soul self that's desiring to be lived and expressed. And in order to be truly fulfilled in life, or truly happy and content, or however you want to call it, you have to be living in alignment with that authentic soul self. And then often, from the time that we're born, we completely unconsciously reject that part of us. Like, it's not like we grow up a lot of us, at least I didn't grow up thinking like, oh, I'm not being authentic. Right. I'm not being true to myself. This isn't really who I am. Like, you think that you are because you've built so many sort of like constructs and personas to make yourself feel safe in the environment that you have to like adapt to, right? In order to like fit in socially or culturally. And so you're suppressing your true self and you don't even realize that you are.
100%. You have to make these sacrifices for safety.
Yeah.
And you're unconsciously making that choice all the time.
You know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then at some point your life falls apart or, you know, whatnot, and you're kind of forced to look at who you really are. So what I find interesting though, is that a lot of times people, their life will fall apart or they will go through tragedies and maybe they'll go through multiple tragedies and they still never fully engage with this process, if that makes sense, because they don't recognize what's happening.
Right. And there's not a, you know, a lot of the reason why I didn't decide to become a traditional therapist and like follow the mental health model. And I've just followed, I would say, like my authenticity and like what I've studied is because the medical model doesn't encourage this process either, you know? So like our bodies give us signals all the time. And then the model kind of like pathologizes or makes wrong or it triages symptoms where the individuation process is like kind of a nature's way of helping you, right? So like you could say I'm experiencing anxiety and to one degree you could say that's a problem and treat that with Xanax or like cognitive behavioral therapy or whatever, or you could listen in the same way that you would say, like, my arm was broken and I would say like, okay, I need to like put my arm in a cast. Like something is wrong here where like the anxiety is pointing to something, you know, and like our dreams, for example, are these compasses that'll give us images to show you what the anxiety is about. Cause a lot of times that anxiety or depression, whatever that is a part of you coming to roost. It's a part of you trying to come through and it's creating anxiety. Why? Because it's probably bringing up this, it is perceived as a threat, right? Because like if you had to sacrifice a part of you for safety, if that part of you is coming back through in your dreams or whatever, it obviously feels dangerous. You know, it feels like it's mm-hmm. something that's, that you should be anxious about. So I think the reason to answer your question, I personally think that the reason that folks can be experiencing this their whole life and having chronic symptoms, I think has a lot to do with there's literally no education around being able to like cultivate an ability to listen to ourselves in this way, in a metaphoric way with listening to the psyche, which is interesting because it's ancient, you know, like myth and the process of individuation is something that Carl Jung in modern day has given a name to, but this is a process that is so old. It's been around forever, literally, you know, and is highlighted in so many different mythologies that it's no wonder that folks are suffering. And I would say that I think that was the kind of the center of my work is to give folks the education and understanding around this process, because I don't think chronic suffering is like part of our nature. I don't think like, you know, that all this time through evolution that nature has like designed us to be miserable. I think that's a signpost, you know, that's like,
yeah.
It's like a signal of something. Yeah.
I totally agree. Right. Like we evolved for thousands and thousands of years and we've just evolved into anxious, depressed messes who are exactly. Just like, it's like, okay, clearly something is going on here.
Right.
And
something's off, you know,
something is off. Yeah. And I agree with you on the lack of information, which is why you know, when we first started working together, I was like, oh, like this is how you get well. Like, that's how it felt. I was like, this is therapy. This is how you do it. Like, what is everyone else doing? Why didn't anyone tell me? That's how it felt. It just felt like this light bulb that was like, oh my gosh, I have to listen, learn how to listen to my psyche, learn how to listen to what my body is telling me. And it's basically like learning, it's like learning a new way of relating to yourself and relating to what's happening to you internally and externally, that I'm like, I was just so mind blown by it because it was so life-changing. And it truly felt like this is it for me, at least. Like, this is right. How you get well.
And isn't it beautiful how it's natural? You know, like,
yeah,
it's almost like you're learning. I love the way you put that. It's like, it's you're learning how to listen to yourself. It's amazing because you start to learn like, oh, it's always been here. My body, my psyche has always been trying to tell me things and I just haven't been listening. And I think what's so beautiful about it is no one is telling you what's right for you, right? Which I think there's a lot of trust that gets built in that. When you start to tune into your own internal compass and listening to it, and it's helping you get well, I think what's really beautiful about it is, you know, James Hillman is like a big critic of psychotherapy. He wrote this book. I think it's like, we've had like 100 years of psychotherapy and what has it gotten us? And, I think, you know, we haven't had therapy most of human history, right? This is a pretty recent, exploration, right? So I think it's funny because it's like, well, then how are people like getting well? Like, how are people not neurotic or whatever? Like these like thousands of years of human history.
Yeah.
And turns out we have these, we have this natural system built in us that is therapeutic. Who knew, you know, like yeah. Nature built in, a compass for how to get well, no matter who you are. Like,
yeah. A compass for how to get well. And a compass that's unique to each individual. And yeah. Like you were saying, it's been there the whole time, but no one is like taught us how to use that.
Right. And so, it's not good for business. It's not good for psychiatry. It's not good for therapy. You know, like, I don't believe that people should be in therapy their whole lives. Like, I'm more of a fan of like, I want to teach people how to tune into their compass and then you learn how to listen to it. And then like every once in a while, obviously you need folks to hold space for you. Obviously, like, I think that's like the function of friendship and community and stuff to a big degree, but a lot of Indigenous folks and, you know, they all know, understand that like, if you're truly tapped into your dreams and you're tapped into the mythopoetic sort of like awareness of the psyche and stuff, it's all there, you know, like your compass for how to get well, and you know what's true, you know how, when you're lying to yourself, you know what's, we all have a conscience, you know, like we all know like, I know I shouldn't stay in this relationship or like whatever, you know? So I think that strengthening that intuitive guidance system, I would say the individuation process usually starts with a tragedy and it starts with depression or whatever it is, but it ends with you having an orientation to yourself and your life that is rock solid. That is no one can shake because you're like, I've been through it. I got to the bottom of it. I built this foundation and now you listen to yourself in a deeper way. And I think what's great about that is you could take that with you the rest of your life, as opposed to like, I don't know, some system of treatment or something that depends on the wisdom of some model or some modality or something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like, so I want to get into a little bit more like specific aspects of like individuation. But before we do that, I just want to say, I totally agree. And I feel like this process is almost the process of like getting free. It's the process of reclaiming your sense of like empowerment so that you don't feel completely just at the whim of what happens to you externally.
Right.
And also, you don't feel completely at the whim of whatever's happening internally too, you know? And I can just speak from personal experience that, like, I did therapy for years. I was on antidepressants for years. You know, I was doing all the things that you're supposed to be doing to get well. And it's just like, well, we don't know what to tell you. And then as soon as I started relating to myself in this way, I was just like, all the things started shifting for me, you know? So, okay. My next question then.
Can I say one thing to that?
Yes.
I love the way you put that. The medical model right now is set up, from my perspective, to treat symptoms, right? So I think the most depressing part of that, and I love that people are depressed, because to me that gives me hope, is that, like, if people are still depressed with the model, that means that, like, there's an innate part of us that's intact that's saying, this is not life. Like, life is not for me to just, like, be like, oh, my symptoms today are, like, chill, you know, like, no. I think there's a part of us that's like, no, life is so much more than this. Like, life is to feel meaning, to feel joy, all this kind of stuff. I do think that that's our natural state. I don't think evolution worked this hard for us to be, like, miserable and neurotic. So I do think that, like, I love what you're saying about how this allows us to reclaim sovereignty in a lot of ways. Also, what I think a really great end result of going through an individuation process is your relationship to your social life, your community, your culture, all this stuff. You're not completely dependent on it. You're an individual. So you have, like, obviously we're social creatures. We can't be, like, totally isolated, but you have your own sense of orientation. So you're not totally dependent on whatever culture you're in. And that gives you a sense of freedom of, like, if this culture is totally out of alignment with my authenticity, then I don't have to, I can move, like, I can relocate, you know, into a new culture, or I can even, like, you have an ability to carry ideas lightly, you know? So, like, you don't have to attach or hold on to ideas from the culture you were raised in, or reject them with a really tight grip, because you have a sense of self that's more rooted in your compass, you know, which I think is, like, invaluable in life, you know?
Yeah. Just amen to all those things. it's almost like it makes you able to, like I was kind of saying, not be so affected by everything. Like, you're just not so triggered all the time by everything that's happening around you. And I feel like I see this a lot just in the stage of life that I'm in, and probably you too, with people who are single. And it's like for a lot of people, their whole sort of identity is just finding someone to be with. And then their whole life is just an up and down and up and down and up and down, because it's like, well, this person is doing this, and oh, now they're not. And then it's this and that and this and that. And it feels like, and I see this a lot with, like, the ex-Mormon community as well, where you're surrounded by things that are so triggering all the time. And so, because you're essentially leaving, like, a cult and being forced to still live in it. And so you're constantly being externally triggered. And so by going through this process, it just allows you to be in the world. And, like, you know, maybe you are single and you are trying to find someone. Maybe you are living in, you know, a really triggering environment with triggering family members or community or whatever, but you have this, like, sense of empowerment internally that you're not just being, like, thrown around everywhere. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Because it's like hinged on that attachment system again.
Yes.
It becomes, the roller coaster is a roller coaster because it's a life or death. It feels like a life or death situation when you don't have a sense of your own authentic autonomy. So you are, like, totally codependent on external culture, values, relationships, whatever it is.
And
it's miserable. Yeah.
It's miserable. And I feel like that's how the majority of people, myself included, spent the most of my life living, you know? It's like, as long as I can make sure things are how I want externally, then I'm going to be okay. And then all of a sudden you can't control that anymore. And you're like, oh, what do I do? Yes. Okay. So we clearly are a fan of this. And this is not to throw shade at anybody who I'm not trying to, you know, make anybody feel bad for wanting to try to find a relationship or by being triggered by their relatives. Cause I have been in those.
No, of course. And also like, don't want to like also, therapy can also be amazing, y'all. So you know, just give me an alternative perspective, of course.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, we love you all. Okay. Everybody, do what works for you. Okay.
Always.
So
always.
So, okay, let's dive in a little bit into, like, obviously we're over here like, yeah, everybody needs to individuate. And people are like, how do I do that? What do I do?
Right.
And so, like there's a few things that come to mind when I started engaging in this process when we were working together. And I'm curious how you would describe that. Like if somebody is like, hey, I want to try relating to myself in this way, like what are some things that people can do or like perspectives they can shift? Like a huge one for me was projection. Mm. Another huge one was honesty about how I'm feeling. Those were two huge ones that I felt like really shifted the way that I was relating to what I was experiencing. So yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I'll start with the honesty thing. I think it's really great. So a practice that I really enjoy is, if anyone really wants to understand individuation, read anything or watch anything from Joseph Campbell. So he's got anything on Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Preface: don't listen to any spiritual teacher, anyone else, even myself included, who talks about the hero's journey. Get it from the horse's mouth, always. Like, go read Joseph Campbell. Don't listen to like people on YouTube talking about the hero's journey, because they miss all sorts of important nuances with the stuff. But the hero's journey really articulates a lot of the process itself. So I would say a practice that can be, you can kind of dip your toe in, you could also go as deep as you want with this, is orienting your nervous system to radical honesty. So what that looks like you just said, your relationship with your feelings. So that would mean maybe getting a pen and paper, and your dreams and your intuitions, all these little feelings you get intuitive hits all day long about what is true to you and what is not. And if you start to orient your nervous system to, okay, whenever my body or my psyche, I get that feeling, that intuitive, this is not true for me, or I'm fawning right now, I'm actually not telling my truth, or whatever, you don't have to act on it. But like dipping your toe in the water is to make a note, write it down. Every time throughout the day that you notice that you said something or you did something, you went to something that you didn't actually want to go to, you said yes when it's really a no, start to keep track of all that. And at the end of the day, notice how many times you made that sacrifice. And if you pay attention to your dreams, you'll notice that your dreams are telling you that story. They're telling you the story of, you know, every time I come into the kitchen, I actually fawn when I really want to tell my partner that, like, I don't know, that like I've actually felt disconnected from them for a year now or whatever it is. Like, I think the invitation into individuation is often fear. It's so Jung has this idea that the treasure you seek will be found in the cave that you least want to go into. So mm-hmm. I think that obviously you don't want to go directly into like the darkest place, but I think the compass for individuation work is, where do you least want to look? Like, really, you know, like really be honest with yourself. Like, is there some area of your life that like, you're like, absolutely hell no.
Yep.
I do not want to acknowledge that.
Yep.
That is where your dreams are pointing to. they're like, hey, look at this. And everyone's like, I have these crazy dreams, or like, I have these reoccurring nightmares. And it's like, bro, it's your soul is trying to be like, look. And
yeah.
It's not to torture you. It's that the treasure, the thing that is actually going to create meaning in your life and actually make you happy, is on the other side of that. It's literally being guarded by your terror. You know, so like, it changes your relationship to fear. It changes your relation to your body and your truth. And a lot of times, it's scary, because if you've spent your whole life ignoring yourself and ignoring those signs, it might mean that once you start listening to those signs, it might mean the death of your relationship.
Yeah.
It might mean the death of your career. It might mean the death of, but what's the use of any of that stuff if it's a lie? You're miserable, you know? So like, I think that would be like my invitation is to, just start journaling and start orienting your nervous system to truth, to what is actually true to you.
I remember vividly when I started doing this with myself, feeling like there was this invitation to actually be honest about how I felt. And so I really started examining, like paying attention, what do I actually feel? And there were things that I would never even have admitted out loud to myself. You know, like for example, one of them that now I'm going to share with the whole internet is that I did not like being a parent.
Right.
And up until I started engaging this process, I couldn't even admit that to myself. Like I would lie to myself about that. Of course, like I never would be like, you couldn't, especially in the culture that I live in, you know, like that's the whole purpose of being especially a woman, is to be a mother, you know? And here I am secretly being like, dude, I hate this. This sucks so bad. Like, why do people do this? You know what I mean? Yeah. Right. And so I started starting to just like say those things to myself. Like, I actually don't enjoy this. You know what I mean? And I think people are so afraid. Or like another good example is like, when I first got divorced, I was so afraid of like being alone. I was petrified, you know, to the point where like, I couldn't even look at it. Like, I couldn't even be like, you know, what would it be like if I actually was alone for the next 50 years? Like it was petrifying for me. Yeah. So then like going into those things that like those feelings that I knew were there, but that I was trying to distract myself from, I was trying to run from, I was trying to control everything around me externally. All of that stuff, I just started being like, no, this is actually how I feel. And then from there, that's like when the magic starts to happen. And I feel like what's interesting about doing this is that you almost begin to, like, have you heard that? What's that quote? Enlightenment is the ego's greatest disappointment, right? So you almost realize, at least this is how it was for me. It was like everything that I was so afraid of, or even afraid of admitting, or things that I had shame about, or like everything that I had essentially pushed into my unconscious, either of like, I can't accept A, B, and C, and D. I can't look at this about myself. All of that stuff, once I started going into it, I realized that the true me, the real me, the soul me, was actually not afraid of or ashamed of those things at all. It was just my ego the whole time.
Exactly. I am so glad you brought that up, because it's like, I think it's easy in all this to just be afraid and be like, fuck, this is going to be like, just like really hard. But the other end of it is like, when you encounter the part of you that is authentic, exactly what you're saying, it's not ashamed. It doesn't play small. It's not like arrogant. It's like, you know, the gold that's on the other side of that terror is the thing that you're actually longing for, like truly, like at your depth. And you don't even, it's like if your ego could have everything it wanted, it still wouldn't satisfy you the way that the soul does. And when you get with the soul like the soul's, the cost of the soul is like, you got to go into the fear or the thing you don't, whatever. But the payoff is a sense of connection to who you are that is more nourishing than like anything, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's what's the hell's better than that, you know? Like,
yeah,
nothing really.
Absolutely. And I feel like what's so interesting about this process too is that for me, underneath everything that I was avoiding, there was like the key to, I want to say, liberation was just a ton, and I mean a ton, of emotion that needed to be felt.
Yeah.
That needed to be witnessed. So yeah. It was like so interesting, like in the process of like, let's say with my kids, for example, I spent months and months and months just like in my journal and in my mind and to you and in sessions, just being like open with all of the parts of me that were like, I hate this. Like, this is so whatever, blah, 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 blah. Right. And the more that those, like that I was able to feel what I had been repressing for so long, it dissipated. It was like all of a sudden I felt like this sort of contentment and freedom that I was like, okay, actually, I'm okay. Like the parts of me that don't want to be a parent, although they are valid, like I said before, they aren't the true parts of me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's I mean, that's a lot of like why I think the work that I do is like the one-on-one stuff is important, because it's like you can teach this process, but so much of it is like, you know, every, you know, moment in your life where you had to say no to your authenticity and say yes, make that sacrifice. There was a whole emotional process that got like pushed away. And as soon as you start saying yes, there needs to be a containment. There needs to be container for you, a safe place for you to explore. Okay, I'm gonna say yes to the truth.
Yep.
And the truth comes out and it's like, I actually didn't want to do that. And I'm pissed. And then like, there comes like rage and the grief, all that stuff has to be felt. But once it's felt and expressed, I would say, you know, the depression or anxiety that people experience, that is the accumulation of years and years and years of those processes that didn't get to be felt and digested through the body. And so the body eventually says no. And that's your anxiety, that's your chronic illness or whatever, as opposed to like, oh, I have anxiety. It's like it's this big mythological creature that like you can do nothing about. It's like, no, it's like a pretty standard, you know, reaction. So I love what you're saying because it's so tangible. It's like, yeah, as soon as I went into this cave, yeah, there was grief there. There was all this kind of stuff. But what you retrieve, the gold that you get is like you, is like your wholeness, is parts of you that are going to reinvigorate your life in a new way. And, you know, another, speaking of projection, that's really beautiful as well with this process is like, when we have to make these sacrifices of authenticity, a lot of times, at least for me, a thing that I've noticed in my individuation process a lot is like, I was always telling myself or making these sacrifices of smallness. I'm not this way, or I'm not good enough or whatever. Like that's like the big, big cultural ideas that sort of get put into us. And a lot of what's in the other end of that cave, that gold is the golden projection, is like, we are so much more artistic or talented or loving or whatever than maybe our ego can hold, you know? So there, of course there's a negative, there's an expansion in the shadow, like to be like, yeah, I'm also like, you know, deeper or in some way different than my ego can hold. But I think we're also a lot brighter and more talented.
Yes.
We give ourselves credit for. So a lot of what's lurking in the shadow or in the body or in this process is unrealized potential that like the individuation process liberates us to be not only more content, but it also pushes us to be more of what we are. And that life force that was debilitated by that sacrifice gets liberated. And then all of a sudden you have all this energy to put into your talents or like your expression or things that are going to allow you to be more of who you are. And mm-hmm. I think the beauty of that is, I think when folks individuate, you are like a beaming light that inspires other people. You know, like the more folks yeah. who choose to be exactly what they are, gives everyone else permission to do the same, you know?
Yep. 100%. Yeah. And I would love to talk about projection a little bit more. So just like continuing along what we've kind of been saying, like if you're wanting to start engaging with this process, a good place to start is obviously being honest with how you feel, feeling the emotions, allowing yourself to feel what you don't want to feel, but then also looking at your projections, I feel like is a huge one.
Yeah.
So I'd be curious to hear if you have any words on that. I mean, projections for me, it's anytime I'm feeling like triggered by something that's happening externally in a way that like I can't necessarily, like it's either making me defensive, it's making me defensive in some way, or maybe it's making me feel sometimes like you were saying, it's almost like a golden shadow type thing where I look at someone and I'm like really like, oh, I wish I was like them. I wish I had that. I wish I was whatever, you know, it can be that as well. It's anything that you're projecting externally on people or circumstances that take you away from like looking at yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think it could. Well, could you ask me the question maybe a little more directly?
Yeah. So like how would someone who like, let's say someone was in a process where they felt like they were projecting, but they weren't sure. What can you begin to do to start examining yourself instead of projecting? So for example, like a very common one with like ex-Mormons is you're around your family and they're, you know, using church language or whatever, or maybe they're saying something to your children that you wish they wouldn't say or what, I don't know, whatever. Maybe they're just, who knows what it is. And you're just like boiling on the inside, you know, you're just like, and you leave and you're just like, so just like, oh, so it's like, how do you begin to take your power back in a situation like that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. So I think with projection, something that I like to keep in mind, because I don't know, maybe some of the dogma in like spiritual or new age community is that like everything is projection, which I think isn't helpful.
And yeah, I agree with that.
It creates like too much like over responsibility on the individual, like kind of like the shadow of individuation, I would say.
Yep.
Where I would say something that I like to keep in mind for myself and my own process is that like, to know that I'm really projecting, I ask you can, and I think it's pretty clear most of the time. It's like, does my emotional response, does it feel appropriate for the level of this situation? Like, does this level of emotion or does this situation really elicit this level of emotion? Because it's like, there's a difference between your parents saying something that's out of alignment with your values and the way that you're parenting and you being like, all right, that frustrates me a little bit. I'm going to set a boundary. I'm going to say something.
That's a boundary. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
So that's like, there's no projection there, right?
Yeah.
But if you're like, I'm so triggered right now that I can't even like talk to my parents right now, or like, I'm going to like lose. I can't believe that the offense, you know? So to me, that's a projection. The projection would be there's something unprocessed that needs to be processed. And the gift in being triggered is that, okay, there is an unprocessed emotion or experience that's in me, that's coming out now, and now I can access it. So now I have an opportunity to get there. So in the same way that like, I think great compasses for projection are hate and jealousy or hate and envy. So like if a political, someone with some type of political stance or someone whose self-expression really makes you angry or jealous, if you're having a really strong emotional reaction to it, there's something there. And
yep.
And I encourage folks that, like, obviously you can't do this all the time, but like, if you can be curious about that and write about it and reflect from a curious place, what's really coming up is parts of you that are longing to be back together with you. Mm-hmm. So for example, like if someone's expression makes you really jealous, you can immediately go into some type of like self-judgment, right? Like I shouldn't be jealous, or like, or they're so much better than me, or whatever it is. When in reality, the projection there would be, there is some part of you that is that and doesn't have room to be that, right? Some part of your personality, somewhere along the journey of your life, you learned that you weren't allowed to be that, or you were shamed out of that expression or whatever. And that part of you is coming back and you're seeing it in someone else. So it's, mm-hmm. it's a gift, right? Because it means that like, if I'm jealous of someone, that means that there's some part of me I'm seeing in someone else and I'm longing to be back in union with that, you know? So it's, of course it's uncomfortable, but if you can resource yourself in curiosity, mm-hmm. it's a gift, you know, it's like your soul coming to meet you through another, which is,
yeah,
gets tricky, but it's like,
yeah,
it's a nice process. And if I could add just one last thing, it's to like balance it out. You don't have to own your projections all the time. And like, if you're overwhelmed with a trigger, like the most important thing is to get regulated first, you know? So like, yeah. This is all technically shadow work, and you can't dive into the shadow if you're so dysregulated, you know? So
yeah.
Just to say that, like, take this type of, dip your toe in, take this work slowly. It's not going to be an overnight thing. And don't like overwhelm yourself with like, I have to own every trigger. I have to like be fully in alignment with like honesty and stuff. It's like, this is a lifetime achievement reward. Okay. Like it's going to take some time, you know, so be careful with yourself, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's especially important for ex-Mormons to hear, because I think a lot of us still tend to sort of hold on to this sort of like, I don't know, like there's something we're supposed to be trying to accomplish. There's something a goal we're supposed to be trying to reach, something we're supposed to like, that we need to reach a certain point in order to, you know, feel like we're a good person kind of a thing, you know? So yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think that it's definitely something that's like, at least for me, just being aware of how to relate to myself in this way was very helpful, because like you said before, there's just not information about this that I mean, I had never even heard anything like this, you know? So I was having my mind blown that, oh my gosh, like I can actually have more control over the way that I feel than I thought, you know? Like I didn't realize that this is something that I could actively work with myself around, you know? Like even just going back to the whole parenting thing, sorry, I keep going back to this, but like, I've always been the type of person who, I just felt very like I always wanted to be out doing something exciting. I always wanted my life to just be like this, just one fun, giant adventure, you know? And I feel like that's completely changed for me. And I think that was a huge part of why parenting was so triggering for me, is because it made me feel so stuck in one spot, you know? And then once I engaged in this process, that completely shifted for me. It's like something that I feel totally just like very content, because I was able to work with those specific parts of me and like take my power back in that way. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's a really long way of saying, I feel like this can be very life-changing, very life-changing. But like you were saying, something that you don't need to like hold it over your head and be like, I need to do this process so that I can, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like it's like, especially people like me who tend to be more perfectionist, you know, prone. It's just something, another way to relate to yourself to help you find relief. And if you're ever engaging in this process and it's not helping you find relief, then, you know, like, slow it down.
Right. Yeah. I think that happens a lot, is like, especially Jung had a notion when he was writing a lot of his work that it would become pop culture at some point. That is, all the ideas would come into culture and the nuance would be lost. So folks would be like, which I see a lot, is like folks diving into shadow work headfirst from a place of like, I need to fix myself. And it's like, you're only going to debilitate yourself more, you know? So it's like slow, you know? And what's great about that too is, you know, your dreams, if you can learn or get someone to work with who works with dreams, your dreams offer a pace and a process where they will kind of point you in the direction of what you can handle, as opposed to like diving in the deep end, which sometimes plant medicine can kind of like send you into the whole thing all at once and can be like really overwhelming and take a long time to digest. So it, you know, especially when you have perfectionist parts and all this kind of stuff, it's really, nice to honor your process and take it slow, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We didn't even talk about psychedelics, which I feel like they're a huge part in sort of helping you access the unconscious. Obviously that'll be a conversation for another day.
Well, we can, if you want, they can.
Yeah. Do you have any, I mean, we have a couple minutes. Do you have like anything you'd like to say?
About psychedelics?
Or about anything. Any last words of wisdom that you want to offer?
That there's nothing wrong with you. Don't listen to anyone who tries to say there's anything wrong with you. Any parts of you that you think are shameful or wrong, if you can find some sense of curiosity, however you take to get there, you'd find that almost every part of you is trying to help you in some way. And maybe is holding some grief or shame or something. And you're not your grief or shame. You're not your anxiety or depression. And wellness, happiness, meaning, a life that feels connected, I think is available for everyone. Doesn't invalidate the suffering, but there's nothing wrong with you. Just don't listen to anyone who tries to tell you that there's anything wrong with you, because I think that's bullshit.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's it. And it's, oh my gosh, I could go on about this forever. Obviously we both could, but I feel like that just even having that narrative alone is different than a lot of traditional, at least experiences that I had with therapy, where it was kind of like, how can we listen to what your anxiety's saying? It was like, how can we get it to go away? But then it's just, it's so ironic because it's like listening to what it's saying is what it needs, you know?
Right. And I think like I have a client, or two clients right now, who are depth psychologists, and they've been in this world for a long time. And something one of them said in one of our last sessions is that, I mean, they've been doing this work for like 30, 40 years. And they were like, yeah, the shadow of psychotherapy is it's trying to help you heal. And a lot of times what it does is it creates shame. It creates more shame without trying, because it's treating pathology. So it's fundamentally saying something is wrong with you or with your system, you know? And that's harmful. It totally is.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I totally agree. And I think that a lot of people need to hear that. Like,
yeah, no, I needed to hear it.
Yeah. Like, how can I relate to myself in a way that's actually helpful and honest and is going to help relieve some of that shame about how I'm feeling. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Cause I think a lot of times, like when you unburden the shame like keeps our vitality inverted. So a lot of the life force energy that could be healing us and connecting us to life and to ourselves, it gets like swamped up and blocked up when shame enters the picture. And I think some of the most tremendous work that we can do is to unshame ourselves. And it's big work, especially because, like, man, our culture runs on shame, you know?
Yeah.
It's like advertisement. Absolutely. Or, you know, shame is a big cultural ethos, I think, for us.
Yeah. We're going to have to do like 12 more podcasts all about, we'll do one about unshaming. We're going to do one about dream work. I want to do one about plant medicine psychosis, since you saw and helped me through that process. So
I'm definitely, honestly, yeah.
Okay. So thank you so much. I definitely want to have you back at some point. Thank you everybody for listening. And like we said before, we are not anti-therapy. We're offering a different lens.
Alternative perspective. Just balance it out.
Yeah. Balance it out, because we both have learned from our own personal experiences what works for us.
Right.
Hey, I think that's all we got for you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks, Otto.
Now give it. Now, hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's actually come up with an identity. Like, what's the name of the identity that you're going to read this one as?
His name is Cool Joe.
Cool Joe, baby. Here it comes. Ladies and gentlemen.
The first name that came to me when you said that was Patrick, but I want to read it as Patrick.
Dude, I'll do it as Patrick. You do it as Cool Joe.
Okay.
You ready?
Maybe you start it and I'll do the next part.
All right, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. As a reminder, the very best way to support this podcast is to just head on over to patreon.com/Mormons on Mushrooms.
There you're going to find bonus content, fun episodes, other shit.
Girl, we're talking about shit you have not heard before.
Never. Mankind has never heard these things before. So go on over to Patreon. But we'd also love it if you gave us a review. Just head over to Apple and give us a quick love over there. Quick love. Quickie.
Just a little bit of love on Apple. Listen, if you're listening on Spotify, that's cool too. Put up a 5-star if you liked it. If you didn't, keep your mouth shut.
Just maybe put up a Flavor Country.
We love Flavor Country. By the way, Mike and I also accept just free pure money, and you can do that at Venmo. Mike, hit him with the deets.
Just put them in our pocket. Just give us some money at Mushmore, MUSHMOR, on Venmo, and we'll use it to buy some kombuchas. Just have a good time.
MUSHMOR. What up? Peace.
Give a fucking yes.